From NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Ahoy, friends. You are listening to the Friday follow-up for Season 18, Episode 15, Dr. Amy Returns, in which Bob welcomed back the marvelous Dr. Amy from the Women in Crime podcast. She was a wonderful guest. As always, we are sans Zach today, but I'm looking forward to talking to Bob about that conversation and a few other things that we have gotten from listeners from our Facebook posts. But before we do that, I think we have a few little housekeeping smatterings. I just wanted to say smatterings. Do we have a smattering of housekeepings?
We have a smattering. We do.
Great.
The smatter number one, the big one, is tomorrow. So if you're listening to this Friday, it was 2 days ago. If you're watching this live, it's tomorrow. But tomorrow morning, season two of my students' Underestimated podcast is back. We just launched published the first. We've had a crazy week of like testing and everything. And we're like, we got to get it out. We said we were going to get it out. So we literally as the bell was ringing, published the first episode in the first group. And if you listened to season one of Underestimated, you know, there's multiple groups. And the way we release them is each group will release, and we release on Wednesdays, their first three episodes. So over the course of 3 weeks, you have the first three episodes. And then the other groups will go. And then while the other groups are going, they're cycling back through and they're doing 2 to 3 more episodes. It'll come back after that as a follow-up. And the first one that is actually only 2 episodes from the first group from season one, the Jeanette Robertson case.
Yeah.
So Chelsea, who was one of 7 people in that group last year, the other 6 were all seniors. She came back and wanted to do more follow up on that case. She did it on her own, and she had some struggles. She got so much more interest in the case than all of a sudden now there's like all these other people. They have their fingers in it, and she had a hard time getting anybody to talk to her. The detective, you know, we have a relationship with the detective on the case, but that's been a real one-way street, and it seems like there's some maybe new leads generated. So he's really, you know, he's taking information, not giving any out. But one of the things that we got in the FOIA request that she got after, and Chelsea was the one that filed all the FOIA requests in that case. One of the things she got after the school year ended was Jeanette's diary. From the year before she was killed. And so we talked a lot about it. Chelsea and I had a lot of back and forth about what do we want to do with this. And ultimately she just, because there was a moment where it was like, I guess I'm going to have to move on to another case. There's not enough here, new information to continue on doing it on the podcast. But then we decided that, you know, the best thing is she kind of broke it down and parsed through it because some of the stuff was personal and she got out, but she decided, and I agreed with her, that it would be amazing because no one has ever heard this before, is to hear Jeanette in her own voice talk about that year. And so the first episode, so it's primarily her reading Jeanette's words from her diary. And so you're hearing about the personal conflicts she's having. In the first episode, which is actually, will be, you know, it's episode one of season two, but it's like episode 6 or 7 in their series. It ends off with the day she gets the job at Gamble's Hardware Store, which if you listen to season one, that's the place where she was ultimately murdered. So that's really good. That one's coming up. We were going to start, I told you we have the one group that has been investigating the effect of partisan politics on society. They've got 2 of theirs done. They had one of the people in the group got sick for like a week, and they're scrambling to get their third one done. So they'll probably be the second group. But then we have 2 other groups. We have one is started with a missing person case from Michigan, a young girl that as often do in these cases, led into a couple other missing people that led to a possible serial killer connection. And they've made contact with detectives, and they've got cops being interviewed. And so Ed Gaines, the serial killer, like we have someone who went to school with him that's been talking to them and doing interviewing with them. So that case is coming up. And then another out of Argus, Indiana, Gracie. Her group has been covering murder of a young girl, and that's been unsolved for 3 decades out of Argus that they've been investigating, and they've got all kinds of new information and new leads on that case. So that's all coming up. So if you're not already subscribed to Underestimated, Looking for It's Underestimated. It's by Bobcat Media. Check it out. Get subscribed. If you haven't listened already, by the time you hear this on Friday, go check out the episode one of season two of Underestimated.
Awesome.
So that's the big one. I told you two things earlier before I remember three more things. What was the other thing?
The other thing was that Throwback Thursdays we can look forward to.
Yeah. So, and again, if you're watching this live, then tomorrow you'll see it. If you're hearing this on Friday, you may have seen it already pop on in your podcast feed. I've had a few guests like Dr. Amy who came back. And then this weekend we have Bob Mata coming on talking about the Edric Faust case. And we circle back to Songbird Lane case. We just, you know, me and Bob, we get together and we just start yapping about everything for an hour. And it got me I remember the first time I talked to Bob, like we barely knew each other. It was in 2022. And I like went back in the True Crime Binge feed and found that. I was like, I'm going to throw that out on Thursday. So I think I'm going to start doing this on, this is a little bonus for you guys, a little Throwback Thursdays where I'm going to publish some of the old, because a lot of the, you know, only about 10% of the Truth and Justice audience listen to the True Crime Binge episode. So some of those interviews I'm going to pop out. So if they're, hopefully they'll be relevant, like this case, you'll hear a 2022 yeah. Bob before Sunday, you hear 2026 Bob. Same thing with Dr. Amy. You just got to hear two versions of her. But yeah, so on Thursdays, I'm going to do Throwback Thursdays. They'll just be old episodes. They're just bonuses. You're not missing anything super important if you miss them. But if you want a little something extra to listen to on your way to work on Thursdays, we're going to put on Throwback Thursday. So for you patrons, you get the pregame show on Wednesdays. You get Throwback Thursday on Thursdays. You get the video on Fridays. And then the main episode on Sundays. There was something else I just came up with.
I recommend that people listen to them if they haven't, because I found so many, I say found, I can't take the credit. You introduced True Crime Binge listeners to so many great podcasts. It was such a great way to share audiences and get our ears on new stories. A lot of them so compelling and inspiring. And yeah, I'm excited. I've been enjoying any replays that you've done of past episodes, because, you know, time has lost all meaning. A year feels like a million years. And there were even podcasts. I feel like there are podcasts that, you know, the last thing I want to do is listen to a podcast that has deep meaning and affects lives and then like not fully remember it because I had COVID or whatever.
Right.
But there are some podcasts that I've gone back to and gone, I'm so glad I listened to that a second time, because the information seeped in differently, or I'm at a different place in my life, or my understanding of the criminal justice system is different because of XYZ. So it's been really great to revisit some of those and kind of look at them with a fresh perspective. So I'm really glad you're doing that.
Yeah, Teresa in the chat says she found Ryan Wolf's show in guilt because of True Crime Binge. There was a lot of, and it's funny because when you listen to like Bob's episode on Thursday, you know, his show was like, was pretty new and pretty small.
Oh yeah,
at the time. At the time then, and now he's like, he especially his YouTube thing is just, I mean, he's got 60 some thousand subscribers on his YouTube channel. Like, he's killing it over there. You can hear little old Bob when he was a new and up and coming podcaster.
Yeah,
before he flew past me and many of the rest of us with his show. But yeah, that I'm thinking at the top of my head several of them. But anyway, yeah. So Throwback Thursdays. And wasn't there something else I did right before we started recording? I thought
you mentioned that you were going to be on Mata's show yourself.
Oh, yeah. That and our schedule next week. There's all kinds of stuff. Yeah. I've had Janet sick and I've had very little sleep. So this could go any number of directions, everybody.
Yep.
Yeah. So next week is a bit of housekeeping. We're going to be recording the follow up on Monday instead of Tuesday, which if you just listen to them on Fridays, no effect on you at all. But if you like to watch the lives, and like right now we got about 100 people in the live stream, watch them live and participate in the chat. Next week will be Monday instead of Tuesday. And because of that, that freed up my schedule a little bit. I am going to be on Bob Mata's YouTube channel on his stream on Tuesday night.
Nice.
I think it's 7 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Central is when we're going to do it. But yeah, he invited me over there. So if you are somebody who likes the live streams and you are like, hey, I like to listen to live streams and watch live streams on Tuesdays, well, you can watch me over on the Defense Diaries YouTube channel on Tuesday.
Very cool.
Yeah.
A lot going on.
I think that's all the housekeeping we have. I know we don't have a whole lot of questions, but what'd you think of the chat with Dr. Amy?
I thought it was great. You know, there was stuff. I listened to the Docs podcast. I don't listen to it it's just one of those great ones where something will trigger me going, oh, I need to catch up on that. And then I'll listen to a bunch of episodes. But a lot of the time, in my experience of listening to their episodes, they don't necessarily talk too terribly much, unless I'm misremembering. I mean, I certainly listened to their, God, the two seasons of, we talked about it the last time I was here, which was 2 weeks ago, the dedicated channel or the dedicated podcast where they just told one story of one person each season. I'm sure someone in the chat will drop it in because I'm just, again, I have sick person brain.
Because they had a second podcast.
Yeah, it's a great play on words, sort of, you know, great justice kind of related, like second plea or like something like that. There's a delay in the chat, so we'll get to it eventually. But there was just stuff I didn't realize that they were doing in their professional lives outside of some of the podcasting stuff. And so it was really cool to hear the two of you kind of talking about, and obviously finding out that there was that connection with the Wrongful Convictions Clinic was really really interesting. And obviously, you know, any revisitation of, you know, you guys did mention briefly Sandy again and some other cases that are reminiscent of that. But yeah, I thought it was another really great conversation. The idea of reassimilating, you guys talked about kind of, I believe that came up again, like reassimilating and the challenges that are posed from that. And just, you know, they're just over there doing really great, thoughtful work as well. And yeah. I'm a big fan.
Yeah. And I don't know if anybody asked that because I figured somebody would. I was not able to connect with Amy and Megan this weekend. I was doing a PI job over the weekend. It was kind of ate up my time. And also I found out that I didn't even realize the Innocence Convention, the big Innocence Con, I guess, that they do. That it, was in Chicago this weekend, which is just around the lake from me.
Yeah.
I wish I had known that because I some of the attorneys from Christian Roberts' case reached out to me and they're like, hey, we're over in Chicago if you can find your way across the lake. But I just couldn't do it in that short amount of time. And Mata, when I talked to him, was trying to make his way over there. So yeah, I've been invited to go like every year and I'm like, oh, I can't make it to Austin at that time of year. I can't do this. I can't make it here. And then this one is just right around the corner for me, and I didn't even realize it was happening. I see somebody already found the answer that I also found in on the Googs.
Yeah,
direct appeal. Yeah, that was the name direct of appeal. Podcast.
It's another great like use of a term that really works so well for the context of what they explore on that show. I wonder if they're going to do another season of that. You guys don't think you guys touched on that, but.
No, Amy and I talked about it off air and I don't know. I think she said, you know, it was fun, but it was just a lot, you know.
Yeah, they have so much going on.
Yeah. And they're both doing a ton of work with teaching and the other work they're doing and the podcast. And it's just, without beating a dead horse, it's also just very difficult to be in this business, right? You more so than ever have to look like how much time can you put into something in a creator economy that's just not what it used to be.
Gotta pay the bills, yeah.
Yeah, so it's hard to put that amount of time into stuff like that. So I don't know. But I will say too, though, what I've been enjoying is check out their YouTube channel, the Women in Crime YouTube channel.
Yeah, you talked about that.
Yeah, it inspired me to remodel my, if you're watching this, look at this wonderful remodel I did in my studio. This is really based inspo from Dr. Amy and Dr. Megan.
Yeah, a lot of carpentry went into this new studio we're looking at.
Quick
here.
Turnaround, too.
Very
quick. I had a custom neon sign made in 3 days. Yeah, yeah, did it quick. But yeah, I don't know. There's so much. I was just talking to Bob about this, too. Mata, you know, there's just so much. I prefer consuming content on YouTube, even though I'm usually just listening. Like most of the time I'm listening, but I love the ability to be able to like watch when I can, you know? Yeah. And Amy and Megan just like, it's, I don't know. It's just such a, for some reason, for me, it's a great, if you're a person who likes to watch a YouTube podcast instead of just listening to it. Yeah. It's just such a, it's really well done. Their producer, James, I think they said is his name.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Yeah, just does a fantastic job of that. So yeah, make sure you check that out too.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, we have some various and sundry comments and questions here. I can start out with Sarah, who says, I really liked hearing on one of your recent episodes how much it means to you When people from the Truth and Justice Army continue on to support the people from your cases, I think we talked about that. I was there for that conversation, right, a couple of weeks ago. And it made me think, who over the years that have contributed to your crowdsourcing and have been Truth and Justice warriors that really made the difference in your investigations?
I am not going to name names because I remember half of them and I'll mix up other ones. And again, I'm running on so little sleep right now. My brain's on top of the fact that I already didn't remember. My brain's not working
you,
well
you
today.
Didn't see these questions in advance. So I didn't give you didn't have time to.
But there's been a ton. I mean, I think back to like Ed's case, you know, one of the things I always tell this story is, you know, when we were trying to figure out if there was, because, you know, one of the state's big elements of the state's case was the car seat was pushed all the way back, but they never had a picture of that anywhere. And there's like two pictures of Elnora's car that is just like in the background, you know, at a certain distance away. And you can see the headrest and where it lines up with like the B post on the car at the angle. And I had put a call. I was like, man, if we could just like get somebody that knew how to do photogrammetry, and maybe if we could find that exact model of car, we could recreate that and figure it out. And we did. Like, there was somebody. I just remember it was somebody in Tennessee that had the exact model of car, and then there was somebody in, I want to say, Missouri that was a photogrammetry expert. Like, that's what they did, and they like got together and did. And I don't even know that we even put it on the podcast because it went right to the lawyers. But they were able to do that and that ended up as part of. I remember sitting across from David Dobbs, who was the prosecutor in that case, in Tyler, Texas, and showing him those recreated pictures, showing him like, here's the car with the seat all the way back, here's the car with the seat all the way forward. Now look at these two pictures, or three, you know, the original and the nose two. I'm like, where was the seat, Dave? You know, like the seat was forward. So there was. That was a huge one. We've had, you know, in Sandy's case, remember the shirt in the tub that we had listener that had like figured out through the information on the tag that it was that particular model was specific only to Costco and I don't know, that was something that got turned over to lawyers. I don't know if they were able to, I think they maybe were able to get down to kind of a list, but you know, but again, that was like, you know, it was like somebody figured something out that we weren't able to. We had, again, in Ed's case, we had, I think that's one of the ways I met John Cryer was, you know, we were trying to find an old airing schedule of a TV show at a certain day and time on a certain, who had connections at ABC or whatever it was. And we were able to find that. There's been so many of them over the years, people connecting me with witnesses, which a lot of times doesn't get aired on the show. Cause you know, I never want you guys going out and contacting people, but I'll often say, you know, if you personally know somebody and you're willing to pass it, and it's happened. Remember Jamie Snow's case? We solved a car theft from 20 years prior from someone who heard it and said something and knew something and ended up where I contacted them, and the person's like, I did. I can't believe like the police didn't catch me. You caught me all these years later.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, so even as recently as last season, just having help with some, you know, the fleshing out of things that you would imagine should have been in evidence or in the files that we got sent, trying to map out and understand better the ball field, for example, things like that, where we just have super smart, savvy, you know, kind listeners who donate their time and energy towards trying to make things more clear that are very muddy, you know.
Yeah, the cell phone data in season 12, contacting witnesses. There's so many. And those are very like investigative steps where, you know, and that's why so many lawyers are constantly coming to us asking us to take cases, is because they're like, holy crap, there's like this giant, you know, army of people that have all these different like weird areas of expertise that, you know, how do you find that as an attorney? They're not in an index somewhere. But when we put out and say, hey, I need to know somebody who knows about XYZ thing, and like, hey, that's my thing. You know, we always seem to have that. And those are very direct towards, you know, investigation. But then again, I can't stress enough how important that human contact element of it is as well for the folks that are still locked up, you know, oftentimes without anybody to talk to, anybody to write. So when they, you know, when somebody, you know, starts writing them and becomes friends with them and visits them, you know, that makes a huge, huge, huge difference. And I know we talked about this before, but I want to say to him again how much I appreciate that, because that's just something that, you know, I've had to, for my own emotional and mental well-being, like I can't get connected like that because I can't focus on the next thing and I obsess about it and it breaks my heart. And so that there's people that, you know, I know, you know, for, you know, one of the most recent examples, and she's in the chat right now, is Teresa. And there's other folks too, who, you know, befriended Jody. And so like, I'm able to say, okay, we're done now on the podcast. I'm working with the AG's office. We're sending the information up there. And, you know, we'll be in touch. Meanwhile, Teresa is there visiting them and spending time with them and keeping them hope, you know, all the different things like that. So, you know, and I think like Kathy McElhinney has been a big one for that, with Jesse Eldridge and Sandy
and
so many people that have, and, Jennifer Hill and Susan. There's so many, this is why I don't want to name names, but like with Jamie Snow, you know, we like every season, we always have groups of you guys that connect with the people and then keep that hope alive for them and help keep them sane while they're locked up, while we move on to the next case, while I move on to the next case.
And the generosity of, you know, just Teresa's reminding us, someone got you a scanner for documents, people who are donating objects if need be, technology, and then also just the generosity of people who are willing to take some of their hard-earned dollars and put it towards recovery funds or reward funds, or, you know, putting into people's like commissaries, you know, wallets and stuff like that.
We did it for Kenny and for George and the biggest one was for Ed. I still remember. I'm gonna put up I remember talking with Mike, and somebody also mentioned here. I'll see if I can get a little recording from Mike for next week, because somebody in the chat said I'm gonna be with Mike this weekend. So I'm gonna make him. She wanted us to tell him hello and see if I can get him to send you guys a little message. But I remember telling Mike, I said, let's put up a GoFundMe and see if we can raise like $5,000 to help Kim get everything she needs to transition Ed home. And within a couple of days, it was $35,000 and a new truck for him when he got out. Like that's. You know, if that's not crowdsourcing, I don't know what is. I still remember that conversation, that talking to Ed. I think it was on the podcast. I think it was recorded. I'm like,
oh yeah.
I was like, Ed, they raised $35,000 for you. And I still remember. I just remember Ed going, say what, Bob? Like, what did you just say?
Amazing. Just, amazing.
Yeah. And that has such an impact. I mean, it's you know, it's money, but that made it. As Dr. Amy, to circle back, and I was talking about that whole trend, and the, you know, a couple weeks before when we had the folks from Notre Dame on, you know, that piece of transitioning home, it's so much stress and so many things to deal with. It makes it so hard to get over the hump and try to get back in a normal life. And in Ed's case, because of the generosity of our listeners, you know, Ed and Kim didn't have to worry about those things. You know, they and it's so many things, you know, like getting a king size bed so that there was, you know, there was room for 6'7" Ed to sleep, and making sure he had clothes and a toothbrush. And when I still remember going into the house before he got released, and Kim had their wedding photos up and all that, like she just, when you walked into that house, you would have swore that Ed had lived there the whole time. Like she used every dollar of that to make sure that Ed felt at home when he got home. You know, I remember the picture of his grandma up over the fireplace. It was amazing. And that was all because of you guys. That's a long answer to your question.
It's a great answer. Unfortunately, I am sick and you've made me tear up. And so now I'm just, the congestion is out of control. Worth it.
Hey, everybody, Bob here. I'm interrupting this ad break to tell you how you can never have to hear another ad and take a huge step towards helping us continue our work all at the same time. As most of you know, I provide all investigative and advocacy services to the people and attorneys that we cover on the show completely free. Over the years, we provided hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of professional investigations to the wrongfully convicted, completely free of charge. And the reason that we're able to do that is in large part thanks to the support of listeners like you. Our Patreon community funds the overwhelming majority of our work, and I want to take this opportunity to ask and encourage you to join the club. The base level membership is just $5 a month. Now, while that's only a cup of coffee's worth out of your account, it makes all the difference in the world to us and the people that we work with. And for your $5 a month, you get a whole list of extra content, exclusive just for patrons. Every week, Janet, Zach, and I do an hour-long live stream just for our patrons. You also get an unedited video version of the Friday follow-up every week, a weekly pre-game podcast that drops into your podcast feed. Patrons often get to participate in interviews that we do on the show live days or weeks before the rest of the audience gets to hear them. And of course, the best part, all of our content is completely ad-free for our patrons at the $5 a month level. Patreon really is the only way that we're able to keep doing this work. And it would mean the absolute world to me, Zach, Janet, and Erica if you'd consider joining if you're able to do so. Joining the Patreon community is super easy. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. Or you can go right to the episode description of this or any episode and just click the link. Thank you from the bottom of our hearts for your support. And now I'll return you to your regularly scheduled ads.
This next one is from Veronica, and it pertains to Ice Cold Case. Of course, you had interviewed Madison a couple of weeks ago. So if you're not up to date on this, and you're not, you haven't been listening to that, or you, I mean, rather you are listening to it and you haven't gotten to this, maybe skip forward a minute or two. But, and I don't know if you'll have an answer to this, Bob, but Veronica says, hey, I'm not sure how far everyone has gotten in Ice Cold Case, but in the Corruption in the County episode, Madison mentions the case of Joanne Bochner. I may have said that wrong. Madison said Edward Dean Richardson was convicted, but his confession may have been coerced. This could be a good option for season 19. Thoughts?
I have not made it that far, but thank you for pointing out, because I will reach out to Madison and ask for some of those details, because, you know, I'm still filtering through. We're getting tons of jail mail right now. I've actually been going to the PO box and getting it and submissions, and we're just still looking for that kind of perfect season 19 case. And so we'll check that out. Thanks for letting us know. But no, I have not. Have you made it that far, Janet?
I listened to that. I listened to Ice Cold Case a while ago. And so I need, I had listened to the whole thing. So I actually, it's on my list. One of those cases that are one of those podcasts that I was mentioning earlier that I listened to a while ago, and I want to go back and revisit it. So I'll definitely, it's in my queue. Solomon says, it's got an episode suggestion, the exonerated Devontae Sanford from Detroit. Such a touching story about a 14-year-old that had to serve 9 years as an adult before being exonerated when a hitman confessed to the murder. And that was, I believe, unless I'm wrong, I believe Devontae was a recent interview on Undisclosed, because they too are in the process of sort of putting together their next season and have been doing some weekly drops where they're just focusing on specifically wrongfully convicted people and in some cases talking to attorneys who are representing those people, and in other cases getting that opportunity to talk to the person themselves. And it was a very touching story. It was really good.
Yeah, and keep those recommendations coming in too, because I've been looking into a lot of cases that listeners have been sending in to look into. And especially, I would love it for folks to send in case suggestions that are, you know, like something that happened locally to them, right? So like not something they heard on a podcast, because that's what I'm trying to avoid. I don't want something that's already been covered on other podcasts, or they saw it on a documentary, or, you know, the Innocence Project's working on it. You know, I want that case that like happened in your backyard, and you're like, hey, there's this story, there's this guy that everybody thinks is innocent, and no one's ever heard of this case. Those that, you know, I want us to be able to really go in and really help somebody that has no one fighting for them right now. So be kind of scouring the your own personal areas and see if you can find something like that for us.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Kathy would love to get in touch with Dr. Amy about someone who was wrongfully convicted of a crime that never happened. Of course, that was one of the things that you guys had talked about, I think, in the past as well, and was a focus of season 2 of Direct Appeal. This idea of how often people are convicted for crimes that are not crimes, that people say, well, this must have been a homicide, and in fact, perhaps it wasn't at all. So maybe there's some way we could get that story over to Dr. Amy.
Yeah,
you can follow up offline.
Yeah, I'll Let me reset there. Yeah, for sure. I can do that. And that just reminded me of, I was just having a conversation with another private investigator around here case, and he's a former law enforcement officer. And that just reminded me that he had mentioned to me a case that he worked on that he was like, you know, can we find a way use, he was, you know, talking to me about, can we use the connections I have through the media and the innocence networks? Cause he's like, I worked on this case. I'm convinced. And it was a case where he said he doesn't think the crime even happened. And this guy was convicted. He recommended that they not file charges. They did. They pushed it through. This is back when he was, a detective. Yeah. So that, cases like that are super frustrating. So that's another one that I have on my list. I have notes about that one in the other room in there.
Have you asked? I'm sure you have, but I'm assuming you've asked like Colin Miller, for example, because I feel like he touches so many. It seems like he always has his finger on the pulse of things that are making it up through the courts that maybe the media isn't covering, but his spidey sense somehow is like he will get the sense of something that's not getting much coverage, and they can't do it all on undisclosed.
Yeah, I haven't for, and because I always think that, well, if he sees that perfect case, then they're going to
no, but they have more than they can take.
Yeah.
They have more than they know what to do with. I would strongly recommend that you reach out, because people will reach out to him because he writes those amicus briefs. And
right.
Sometimes it's stories that, you know, if they're knee deep in a different season, I'm sure he would rather have a faster response to someone who's, you know, wrongfully convicted than having to wait a year or 2 years or something to have it get a look. So I would say definitely reach out to Colin.
Because our season 15 case came from Rabia, actually.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. I just feel like he just has an awareness of cases that I've never heard of at all, except through him, because an attorney reaches out to him or something, which often means that, you know, no media has been interested up to that point. So that could work. And then speaking of detectives who realize or who think that someone else on their team or someone else from a different era of that same police precinct maybe acted against what this person would have recommended, wrongful convictions, things like that. Noel had topped off the comments by saying, have you listened to the rest of Susan Simpson's Proof podcast? I'm addicted. She's amazing. Of course, you recently had Susan on, and I feel like we bring up Proof almost every follow up just because the work that she and her team, I think they're all equal partners, are doing is really extraordinary. And yes, indeed, the stuff that they have been working on this season, knowing that they are potentially exposing multiple wrongful convictions out of the same cold case team in Michigan, is chilling, distressing, and again, not unlike Truth and Justice. Like, I just get so excited when I know that the Proof team is sinking their teeth into something, because if I were a corrupt officer or detective or prosecutor, I would be running scared.
Yeah, I'd be there. You missed last week's episode, but I misread a question and I thought somebody was asking who would I want to investigate a case. And that wasn't what they were asking at all.
Uh-huh.
But my response was Susan Simpson, 100%.
Totally. Totally.
But no, I haven't finished it yet. I did listen to a few more episodes after I had, because I had her on right after the season started. And yeah, I was keeping up a little bit, but then I get to, I've listened to several episodes of Ice Cold Case and listened to the, I've been scattered around so much. Finished? Are you up to date?
I have. Yeah. Jacinda and Kevin and Susan really make a great team. You know, and I continue to be such an undisclosed nerd, and they were such a power trio. And it's really cool to see this other, it's like the strengths are multiplying with these multiple podcasts, kind of almost spinoffs or new projects that people take on. They have seemingly such a great work vibe, it sounds like they may be in Michigan for a while
a lot of off-air conversation with Susan about all that. Before she was on the show and then after, and she was just telling me there's just so much.
Their conviction rate was like 100%. I mean, it's nuts.
Yeah, and some of those cases happened. That was part of what we were talking about. My dad was in college in Kalamazoo at the time of some of these murders. So I was like passing information back and forth from my dad and her, you know.
Yeah.
That's definitely on my list to catch up as soon as I have a minute.
And that's particularly compelling because that's what made me think of it. So Noel, or Noel, but I think maybe it's Noel, couldn't have accidentally timed that better, because as you were talking about the person, that you spoke with who said, I don't think this person should have been charged. I don't think they should have, you know, gone to trial, much less be convicted. It's so fascinating to have the ear of a former investigator who's closely associated with that group, if not part of the group, being confronted with these facts. And really, if you're a good person and you're willing to open your mind to the possibility that you may be extremely crushed and disappointed by the actions of people you considered your peers or your mentors, worst case, you know, that you can hear a person kind of really go, no, this is wrong. Like, this is wrong. This is, someone has done a great injustice. I just, that's very powerful and very inspiring to hear. You know, again, because we can be pretty tough on law enforcement. It's good to hear when people are like, if it was wrong, we need to fix it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. No. So the answer to the question is I haven't caught up. Janet obviously has, and I will. I promise.
It's great. It's great, great, great. That's all we have from our Facebook post for follow-up questions. And I don't think there's anything, if I missed something in the
chat, hope not, apologize. I'm dying, you're dying, I think. let's not look and see if we missed anything. Let's just say
Let's all go get ready to check out Underestimated Season 2 either tomorrow or right now if you're listening to this. Yeah. If you're listening to this on Friday.
Yeah. Check it out. So yeah, you got Wednesday, our patrons got the pregame show, and the Underestimated podcast comes out on Wednesday. Thursday, we're going to do our Throwback Thursday episode, an old episode with Bob Mata. You're listening to this on Friday. And then Bob is back for a brand new conversation on Sunday. And then we're recording next Monday. I'll be on Bob's show on next Tuesday.
Packed.
So it's just a wild, packed week full of so much Bobs. Lots of Bobs happening.
I'm so excited to hear you guys talk more about Songbird. I know that's something a lot of listeners of this podcast follow very closely and have been waiting anxiously to hear anything about. I'm not saying that you have to have gotten new dish out of him, but even just conversation about it that, you know, we haven't heard before between two people we love would be something to look forward to.
Yeah. We also talk about another case that he's working on these things is going to be the next season of Defense Diaries. So that's all coming up. So make sure you tune in on Sunday, and we'll talk to you guys next week. If you're going to be live, it'll be Monday night, and we'll see you then. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, everybody. Bye, guys.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weaver. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X @truthjusticepod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.